Welcome back to the Investment Conversation. This is part of a special series we are doing for our 2024 Mid-Year Outlook. I'm Joe Graham, head of the Investment Strategist Group here at Lord Abbett, and today I'm here with Matt Tesico, who's a partner at Lord Abbett, head of our equity department, and a lead portfolio manager for our innovation strategies. Thanks for joining, Matt.
Thanks for having me.
Matt, I know you've been an equity bull for a while now, so the advance this year in markets probably didn't surprise you, but was the way it happened surprising at all to you, with inflation a big part of the story this year?
I would start by saying that we remain bullish and the underpinnings of the equity bull market are intact, and those are strong earnings, moderating inflation, a broad participation in the market, so a number of stocks advancing in the market's advance, and you have some idiosyncratic secular drivers, including but not limited to generative AI. On inflation specifically, we looked through it and we believe the market looked through it because it was occurring in the context of a year-long disinflationary process. That continues with fits and starts. The second reason the market looked through it is because when you get beneath the numbers, the impact of shelter, which is 35% of core CPI, is running at 5.5 to 6%. So when you take shelter out, the rest of core inflation is running closer to the Fed's target, below 3%. So we think the market correctly looked through the CPI calculation of shelter, which is known to be lagging. And then lastly, just the other evidence of inflation. If you look at commodities, some commodities are up, some commodities are down, but it's nothing like the advance in commodities that we saw in late 21 or early 22. You don't have the supply chain pressures that we had in 21 or 22. And lastly, labor markets, if you look at the quits rate or even the most recent employment report, it's clear that the labor market is cooling somewhat. So I think the market appropriately looked through the inflation numbers and concluded that the moderating inflation story of the second half of 23 was still progressing.
Yeah, that makes sense. So you don't hear a lot of people talking about a hike as the next move. It's kind of a when, not an if, that there would be a cut. So yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You mentioned there some of the other idiosyncratic drivers, generative AI, obviously one of them. Can we dig into some more kind of those other drivers to the market advance?
Sure. I'll start with earnings because I think that is critical. After Q1, earnings expectations were again revised up. Revenue growth for the S&P 500 is tracking to somewhere around 5% for 2024. Earnings growth are tracking closer to 10%. If you move out of the S&P 500 and get into the smaller cap stocks, earnings growth is expected to be a little bit faster than that. If I look at both revisions and growth, I'd call out some of the strongest sectors as tech, communications, parts of consumer, industrials, as well as materials. I'd say there's just less macro noise. Going back to what you said about cuts versus hikes, when the Fed was in the middle of their hiking cycle, the correlation between stocks and rates was elevated. We have seen that come way down, and now stock prices are tracking more closely with earnings surprises. And then again, there are a number of idiosyncratic tailwinds, secular tailwinds, that are driving the market. So we'll start with generative AI. I believe that this is as big as the smartphone or as big as the internet. It is a big deal. We continue to believe it's a big deal, and we still think it is somewhat underestimated. We also think there's a secular driver around a wellness. This is most obvious with the weight loss drugs, the GLP-1 drugs, but we're seeing those drugs have an impact on other parts of the market, including in consumer staples or in behavior and consumer discretionary like restaurants, because it is changing the amount of protein that people are consuming. And so the impact of this wellness drive of the weight loss drugs is having an impact not just in the large pharmaceutical companies that are selling those drugs, but across other sectors as well.
Huh, I hadn't heard that. So less protein, more efficient farming, because I guess protein is usually a pretty inefficient way to do farming. So the bigger, I didn't think about that, bigger impacts of those GLP-1s.
So the impact is really that the number of people taking those medicines are looking for ways to consume more protein. And so that is driving a shift in consumer demand for some of the food products that they're eating.
Okay.
Both in where they're going out to eat as well as what they're eating at home. And the last big factor I'd say is just this broad increase in capital expenditures and infrastructure spending. And that's really happening both here and outside the US. In the US, it's really supported by federal stimulus. So I've got an alphabet soup of stimulus measures. We also have the big tech companies that are spending on data centers to support their generative AI aspirations. And then this concept of reshoring or nearshoring, mm-hmm. either because of geopolitical risk or in the aftermath of COVID, is driving infrastructure spend both here as well as in Europe and in parts of Asia.
I see. Yeah, that's a lot. That's a lot of things kind of driving earnings. And like you said, earnings more connected to stock prices, which makes a lot of sense. One thing we talked about in our year ahead outlook, which obviously was at the end of the last year, we talked a lot about global growth and the spreading of growth, you know, from what has been a U.S.-centric story into international markets. How's that gone so far this year? And what do you see that's exciting today on the global scale?
Yeah, part of the earnings story, and I probably should have said this earlier, is that global growth is healthy. I would say, starting with Europe, I wouldn't say that European growth is strong, but it is positive. And now their disinflationary process is further along than mm-hmm. the US. So they're on the front of an easing cycle. So you have growth that is positive, with the potential to get a boost from central bank easing. Two great stories are Japan and India. Japan is benefiting from much more shareholder-friendly policies. Japan is also benefiting from inflation. The little bit of inflation that they're seeing has allowed them to emerge from decades of deflation. I'd also say that Japan is an economy that is very much centered around technology and robotics. So some of the trends that are benefiting the U.S. market are benefiting Japan as well. The story in India is a little bit different. Certainly, there are some forces factored around political leadership. There's been some easing regulation, some banking reform that has made business in India more productive. But they're also benefiting from China weakness, or at least countries like the US and Europe seeking an alternative in their supply chains from China. An example of this is Apple moving production, some production from China to India. And we're seeing this, I'd say this is beyond just India, the concept of reshoring has benefited parts of peripheral Europe as well as parts of North America and South America.
Interesting. And on the India story, I would imagine that as people look to China, as I've heard the word uninvestable, I don't think it's kind of there anymore, but are people looking to India as like that growth, that emerging markets growth in lieu of China?
I think that's exactly right. I think that is harder to put a hard number on. Mm-hmm. But there's certainly some benefit of capital flows moving out of China, a desire to stay within emerging markets with some positive fundamentals happening in India at the same time.
Yeah, no,
that has been a benefit.
So another thing we talked about at the year ahead outlook was a spreading of leadership. We talked about the US to global, but also from, you know, what was really concentrated in just a few of the what they were calling the Magnificent Seven stocks. I think there's probably been more diversification within the Magnificent Seven and then also outside of that. Can you tell me, does the argument still hold for leadership outside of the Magnificent Seven, including things like small caps? How does that look today?
I think you said it exactly right. I think the market is differentiating and broadening. Within the Magnificent Seven, this time last year, those stocks were moving monolithically. This year, those stocks are moving much more aligned with their earnings growth. So, for example, NVIDIA has had tremendous earnings growth. They've seen the greatest stock price appreciation year to date. Tesla has seen earnings contract, and their stock has seen more weakness. Again, contrast this with last year when the stocks in the entire stack, in the Magnificent Seven stack, were all moving up. I'd also say that the market is broadening beyond just the top seven or top 10 stocks. Other large cap stocks, other mid cap stocks, other small cap stocks are participating. 75% of stocks, roughly, are trading above their 150-day moving average, which basically means that three quarters of the market is participating in the advance this year. Again, that's very different than where we were at this time last year. And so beyond just stocks outside of the largest working, you also have stocks beyond technology working. So technology was a very strong sector, especially big technology was a strong sector last year. This year, industrials are also participating in the advance. Consumer stocks are participating in the advance. Financial stocks are participating in the advance. So the market has broadened both from a cap standpoint, but also from a sector standpoint and from an industry standpoint, where we're seeing more stocks participate and contribute to the advance we're seeing so far this year. So I definitely think that is a story that will continue this year. And I'd say it's still early in that as well. I think there's a lot more to go with more stocks participating in the advance in 24 and into 25.
I imagine that's a good story for active managers as well, because when you have just a few of the very large cap stocks, it's pretty easy for an index to pick up on that. But as leadership starts to broaden, it becomes a little more differentiated, you know, from company to company, and a good story for active.
Preaching to the choir there.
Right, right. Matt, one more question we get a lot from clients is, what are the possible impacts of the election? Obviously, it's an election year, and people are concerned about that. Can you just give us some background into the history around elections and what you expect from this one with regards to its impact on the markets?
Yeah, I think elections are important, but from a market standpoint, tend to be less material. Specifically, though, year four of an election cycle is typically good for equity markets. Your best year in an election cycle is year three, but year four is a close second. I do think that because both of the candidates have been president before, there's less unknown about these candidates, which means there's less uncertainty. Less uncertainty is good for equity markets. I don't want to dismiss the risk entirely, but it is a unique election in that both of these candidates are well known, which does reduce some amount of uncertainty. The last thing I'll just say, though, is any risk around geopolitics or the election, we have tended to view as an opportunity over the long run. Bouts of geopolitical risk are very good buying opportunities in equities. They tend to cause some volatility. They tend to cause some period of weakness. But if you have a good trend and good underpinnings for a bull market, like we have here with strong earnings, lower inflation, a broad participation, good breadth in the market, and some of these secular drivers we spoke about, that is much more critical and important to the market trend than the election.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, thank you, Matt.
Thanks for having me.
And thank you all for listening. Make sure to visit the Insights section of lordabbott.com to find all of our Mid-Year Outlook articles and other market commentary. Once again, thanks to Matt DiCicco, Partner and Director of Equities, for joining today.
This podcast is intended solely for informational purposes and is not a recommendation, offer, or solicitation. The contents are based on available information at creation and subject to change. It is not intended as investment, legal, or tax advice. Lord Abbott is not acting as your fiduciary. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. All investments involve risk, including the loss of capital. Certain information contained herein has been obtained from third-party sources, and such information has not been independently verified by Lord Abbott. The views and opinions expressed by the Lord Abbot Speaker are those of the Speaker and do not necessarily represent the views of the firm as a whole. References to specific asset classes and financial markets are for illustrative purposes only. Neither Lord Abbot, nor the Lord Abbot Speaker, can be responsible for any direct or incidental loss incurred by applying any of the information offered. The information in this podcast does not constitute an offer or solicitation in any jurisdiction. This broadcast is the copyright 2024 of Lord Abbott & Co. LLC, all rights reserved. This recording may not be reproduced in whole or in part or any form without the permission of Lord Abbott. Lord Abbott Mutual Funds are distributed by Lord Abbott Distributor LLC. For additional information on risk and a glossary of terms used in this broadcast, visit lordabbott.com. This episode was recorded on May 21, 2024.